Well, at a time when we're seeing bombs raining down on Gaza, record-breaking heat waves caused by climate change, and astronomical wealth inequality, it's really not hard to see why growing numbers of people, and especially young people, are identifying as anti-capitalist and looking for some kind of radical alternative, radical politics. But for some people, the alternative that they're turning to is some version of Stalinism. And I think this actually is a real travesty. There are some Stalinist groups in Western countries, actually, who are growing in numbers at the moment. So the Party for Socialism and Liberation in the United States and the Young Communist League in Britain. And there are also like a bunch of Stalinist like podcasts and social media pages and things that are really growing in popularity. Although it's worth saying they have a real outsized influence in the online sphere, and their politics can be very like shallow and like edgelord meme-y. But nonetheless, it really matters that people are being politically influenced by these ideas. And I think it's a really terrible development. I think while these politics are seen as kind of edgy and radical, and they use a lot of the language of Marxism, so they talk about class, revolution, and really appeal to people's righteous anger at US imperialism, I think the record really needs to be set straight here. Stalinism is a conservative political tendency that mirrors all of the worst things about the capitalist system. It is a complete distortion of genuine Marxism, and in practice it has played a despicable counter-revolutionary role in struggle. It's been quite a while since Stalin's rise to power, and in most of the world, the Stalinist states have disintegrated. But I think this means that it's actually easier to distort the realities of Stalinism in its heyday, like it happened a while ago. There's not as much of a living memory. So I think it's worth actually returning to a little bit of that history to remember it. So Stalinism in Russia was not a continuation of the revolution led by the Bolsheviks and Lenin in 1917. Stalin led a bloody counter-revolution that reversed most of the gains that had been made by the revolution. So workers' rights to bargain collectively and to go on strike, that was outlawed. People's freedom of movement was restricted, and women's return to traditional roles as mothers and wives was really encouraged from above. While the working class were hyper-exploited at work and in labour camps to fulfil Stalin's five-year plan to catch up with Western industrial development, senior bureaucrats like army marshals and high government officials earned 100 times more than the average worker. And as a final nail in the coffin, Stalin oversaw the brutal suppression of his critics. Thousands of Bolsheviks that had helped to lead the revolution in 1917 were put on sham trials and killed. By the late 1920s, political and economic power in Russia was concentrated in the hands of a minority exploiting class who ruled through brute force, but also through the ideological butchering of Marxism with the claim that this is now socialism in one country. And I think really the idea that this is the model that socialists should aspire to is utterly discrediting, which is why the capitalist class all over the world argue that this was the inevitable and desired outcome of the Russian Revolution. Tragically, the counter-revolutionary politics of Stalinism then proceeded to be carried over into many countries where there were communist parties that were now expected to carry the line coming from Russia. There's really way too many examples to go into of what this looked like, but just to give one example, in the Chinese Revolution of 1925 to 27, the Chinese Communist Party was forced by Stalin to completely subordinate itself to the bourgeois nationalist Kuomintang. This had catastrophic consequences because to keep the Kuomintang on side, the Communist Party had to restrain the workers' and peasants' uprising. And in return for that, what did the Kuomintang do? They violently smashed up the workers' movement, crushed the Communist Party, which over the revolution had grown from fewer than 1,000 members to around 50,000. But thanks to Stalin's policy, it was almost completely wiped out. In the Eastern Bloc, Stalinism meant the installment of top-down bureaucracies, which maintained tight control over their populations. It meant border walls, the repression of free speech, and the imposition of five-year plans to speed up the rate of exploitation, particularly in areas related to military production. And the sort of grievances that built up for the populations of these countries really started to be expressed in a bunch of uprisings that happened after the 1950s. So one that was significant in shaking the illusions of Stalinists in the West was that of Hungary in 1956, which some people might know about. So an uprising of students and workers demanding democratic freedoms, economic inequality, and just the end of Hungary's subordination to Russia. That was met with Russian tanks and open machine gun fire. The revolution, which reached really inspiring levels of worker self-organization, was eventually drowned in blood. And Peter Fryer, who was a revolutionary who wrote an account of the uprising, he wrote of the Russian invasion. In public buildings and private homes, in hotels and ruined shops, the people fought the invaders street by street, step by step, inch by inch. The blazing energy of those 11 days of liberty burned itself out in one last glorious flame. Hungry, sleepless, hopeless, the freedom fighters battled with pitifully feeble equipment against a crushingly superior weight of the Soviet arms. And he went on to say, "I was heartsick to see the army of a socialist state make war on a proud and indomitable people." So by the time the radicalization of the 60s and 70s swept a lot of the world, communist parties everywhere really were playing such a conservative role in politics that a really large section of newly radicalizing young people just consciously started to turn away from them. You really only have to look at the role they played in France in 1968 when thousands of students rebelled in the streets against the right-wing Gaullist regime. The Communist Party union officials were essentially telling workers, "Fuck the students, they're all bourgeois scum." And then when workers were inspired by the students anyway and had the biggest general strike in history at the time, the Communist Party kept a tight lid on it, stopped it from getting out of their control, and then wound it up so that they could prove their credentials as responsible leaders to the ruling class and get a seat at the table. So like as if these people are like edgy and radical and inspiring. And even in Australia, Stalinist parties, which included both the Communist Party of Australia and the Maoist split, the Communist Party Marxist-Leninist, or CPAML, they played a really despicable role in the union movement from the 1930s onwards. They became increasingly like top-down and bureaucratic. So during World War II, the Communist Party adopted a nationalist pro-war line that led them to not only oppose strikes, but even organise strike breakers. And while some shifted leftward sort of somewhat in a, I guess, superficial way in the 60s and 70s to try to appeal to newly radicalising young people, they really revealed their true colours with the crushing of the New South Wales Builders Labourers Federation. So this was a union which had led many inspiring militant struggles around workers' rights and social justice issues. Most well known is the Green Bands. And lots of their leaders were in the Communist Party, but critical of Stalinism. They were sort of in the party because they saw it as the only serious left-wing group to join, but that doesn't mean that they agreed with everything that the party stood for. So when all of this, the militancy just became too much for the building bosses, it was Norm Gallagher from the CPAML who they could rely on to deal a final blow against the BLF. So Gallagher, as secretary of the Victorian BLF, set up a federal BLF branch to replace the New South Wales one. And then the building bosses went about sacking workers who refused to join the federal branch over the New South Wales branch. And once in control, the Gallagher installed leadership lifted a bunch of the green bands, pushed through a new award that undermined many hard-won rights to safety on the job. And it's also worth pointing out that only one CPA-led union offered any meaningful support to the New South Wales BLF when they came under attack by Gallagher and his thugs, and the rest just stood on the sidelines. So thankfully today there aren't all these like mass communist parties with like a mother country to defend, but the ideology of Stalinism is still around. And as I said at the start, it's being promoted and being taken up by some people on the left. And that's because Stalinism goes beyond just like support for the Soviet Union. It's a top-down authoritarian brand of politics that glorifies dictators as long as they aren't allies of the United States. I browsed through a bunch of Stalinist or Marxist-Leninist websites that had articles like worshipping North Korea, Gaddafi, who was overthrown by the Arab Spring revolutions when they reached Libya, and Bashar al-Assad, the butcher of the Syrian revolution, which was supposedly a CIA plot. And really, I think a lot of Stalinists could give anti-vaxxers a run for their money when it comes to conspiracism. The podcast Proles of the Round Table, it's like a sort of Marxist-Leninist podcast that I unfortunately subjected myself to. They had an episode that was absolutely fawning over Xi Jinping after one of them went on a state-sponsored tour, very unbiased tour of China, which is apparently this great democracy where Xi is actually fighting corruption in the party, and it's still a socialist country even now because all of the businesses, even the private ones, are overseen by members of the Communist Party. So that's communism. Really, I don't think there's a better example of a supposedly socialist country mirroring all of the worst aspects of United States capitalism. Crackdowns on Muslims who are branded religious extremists and terrorists, the heavy surveillance and policing of workers and the poor, and skyrocketing wealth inequality and military spending. And actually, there's a global rich list of 2023 that showed that China claimed the title of the country with the most billionaires last year. And when students and workers in Hong Kong participated in a mass resistance movement in 2019 against the encroachment of their democratic rights by the Communist Party of China, the way Xi spoke about them as like violent terrorists was barely distinguishable from the way that Trump was talking about the Black Lives Matter movement. So the idea that the best we can hope for in politics is to like choose some dictator to support, it's really just a mirror image of the kind of lesser evilism that we have in the West, where we have to choose in elections, like which political party do we hate the least that's going to oversee our exploitation over the next 3 or 4 years. Like the effect is just to lower people's horizons for what we mean by liberation. There is also a deep elitism in Stalinist politics. If socialism is a minority at the top making decisions on behalf of the working class, and if it can be introduced through a minority sort of taking power with guns or being bureaucratically installed, as we saw with the Soviet Union satellite states, then the role of the masses is just passive. It's just about personality cults where great leaders are supposed to be like cheered on for taking power on behalf of the masses, and the masses have to continue doing as they're told by the people in power. And I've had many debates with Stalinists who have insisted actually that revolution has to be made by a minority on behalf of the majority because the masses are just too bought off, they're too uneducated, like they could never do it. And really, when that's your attitude towards the majority of people, it's no wonder so many Stalinists today aren't particularly serious about going amongst ordinary people, finding new people, getting involved in politics, trying to win them over to struggle. Like, a lot of them apparently like here, a bunch of them just run like soup kitchens and stuff. The podcast I mentioned, they literally just get drunk while talking about politics. Like just completely unserious. So this is all just an utter distortion of genuine Marxism. Real Marxism is about the active participation of the masses of workers in reshaping society through their own self-activity. Our vision for human liberation are the sorts of images we saw coming out of Egypt in 2011, where brightly coloured radical street art covered walls, protesters took over the main city square to self-organise food distribution, political education and cultural events, and a wave of strikes saw the downfall of their dictator Mubarak. Or those which came out of Iran in 2022, where protests swept the country after the brutal death of 22-year-old Kurdish woman Mahsa Amini at the hands of the morality police. And we saw hundreds of thousands of students and workers calling out for women, life and freedom, with women playing a leading role and strikes being organised in a number of industries. And really, I think it's important to look back further in history at the revolutions where workers formed their own organisations to start to seriously reshape society from below. And that, it's worth pointing out, happened in a bunch of the revolutions against the USSR in Hungary and in Poland in the 80s. And this is what workers' democracy actually looks like. The role of a party is not to take power on behalf of workers. It's to encourage their participation, to develop their confidence, and win them to an argument to the need to take power and run society themselves. And short of the sort of mass parties needed to lead revolutions, in the here and now, we need to build sizable, serious, but also dynamic and lively revolutionary organizations to play a role in organizing and fanning the flames of resistance today. And last of all, our politics must be internationalist. There is no such thing as socialism in one country. Capitalism is a global system with production lines that cross borders and with horrors that cross them too. So we need global cooperation to deal with the climate crisis and to see an end to war. And we aren't for choosing sides in war. where for neither Washington nor Beijing, we stand on the side of international workers in their struggles against all forms of capitalism. Stalin was once described by the Russian Menshevik Nikolai Sukhanov as a grey blur. And I think that really poetically sums up the political worldview of Stalinism that really needs to be abolished once and for all. And to have any hope of winning a better world, we need to see the growth of the colourful, sharp politics of international workers' self-emancipation.